There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, we made it. Friday edition of Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along. Next couple hours, you and I hanging out, talking on the text line and the phone line at 343-0106. 343-0106. Also, you got the FM Talk 106.5 app. You can use that for one of those talk back messages. So get ready for that. Seeing as Jeff and I shut it down with a little football talk there at the end of his show, as people chiming in on the text line on football. Reminder, too. If you have not gotten your picks filled out for this week, it's the we got till tomorrow morning. We get them done today as for, what is it, week six of the college football pick'em right here on FM Talk 106.5. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of us in there in the mix. Make sure you make your picks. It gives you a chance to win those great prizes from Spring Hill Ace Hardware. And speaking of this guy, a participant in college pick'em, and you still down the 300s with me? Or I think actually I came back. I think I'm like 170 or something now.
Well, I had an 8-2 week last weekend. So, yeah, I bumped up a little bit.
Okay.
I was so far down the list, though, so I don't know where that put me. But, yeah, I had a good week. I'll take them.
8-2? Man, that's heady stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel important for a week. And now, I've been, averaging 5-5 weeks.
Me too.
I had one where I think I was like 3 or something. I was just awful. So it's been a slug. But yeah, 8-2 last week. I feel good. Got my picks in for this week.
Okay. What is your pick? You know what I was thinking about when I was making the picks for this week? If y'all don't know, John, big Iowa fan. You got that Ohio State team versus Iowa.
So Iowa hasn't won at Ohio State since 1991. I don't think they win this weekend. They are 19.5-point underdogs. I took Iowa simply because that point spread's large. Iowa also has some vulnerabilities in the secondary. Ohio State has a dynamic wide receiver that catches the ball with one hand. And so that could be a problem spot as well. I think 19.5 points is a lot. Iowa looked really good in its last game. They finally got a running game going, so that it should be a tight, I'm hoping, a tight first half, and then we'll see. Ohio State will pull away in the second half, but I don't know. 19.5 points is a lot. So
you just laid out the reasons for taking Ohio State to cover here. I did it because you're my buddy, and I'm looking at it and like, well, John likes Iowa. That's the logic of mine. Like, John likes Iowa. I like John, so I took Iowa as well. So now we've given everybody your picks.
And I took Auburn as well, too. That's 23.5 points. Yes, they're on the road. Yes, Georgia's going to be fuming, and Georgia's a good football team. Auburn's down, but that's a lot of points. We'll see. I don't know. Are we going to see a bunch of blowouts? I don't think so.
I hope you're right.
That's a lot of points. Vanderbilt, this is a better Vanderbilt team than we've seen in the past. Are they 23.5 point underdogs? I mean, does Alabama have a little bit of a come down on the road up in Nashville in that game? So, yeah, it's just a lot of intriguing point spreads. I mean, if you do a head-to-head, of course, Georgia wins.
Well, sure. Alabama wins, we're talking
and
spread.
Ohio State wins. But the spread, it throws a curveball in all this. I do like Texas A&M, though, to go over Missouri. So we'll see.
That was
we'll
like a two-point game or something. Okay, well, we'll rally back up next week and see how you did, if you had another 8-2 and I had another lackluster. Yeah, maybe that's what I'm looking at for me. This story, reading through, and y'all can check, of course, John's work over at AL.com. And this is just – there's some stories that you and I, you've been writing about forever. I've been talking about seemingly forever, and you and I have been together talking about for a long time. And that is the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project. And you write in this first sentence, it's true. Until I read this, I hadn't thought about it. You said it's nearly been 3 months since the largest federal grant ever was awarded for an Alabama infrastructure project. Yeah, there was a bunch of hubbub about it then. What's going on now? Are they doing anything with this now? Are we, what's happening?
Well, I mean, you know, we're just, this is a slow project, as we're all aware of. Yes, a historic grant received in July, $550 million from the USDOT. A lot of, you know, the hallelujah was the quote from Mayor Stimson and all that other stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's time for an update. So I'm glad Al Dodd, I sent some questions to Al Dodd just to get an update where things were at. And that's what the story basically is about up on online at AL.com. But, yeah, the current status is they're still, you know, trying to get – they haven't finalized the TIFIA loan process. That's a work in progress. That's a huge portion of this project, you know, to get the loan approved, because we're looking at, what, 49% of this project would be based on low-interest loans through this TIFIA program that's offered by the federal government. And that's kind of where they're at right now on the financing side of things. They got to get this loan process finalized. And in the meantime, they're applying for grants. I think, you know, mega grants, another grant that's out there. But, you know, the focus is to get this loan approved and to move forward with the project's groundbreaking. They're hoping by next fall to be moving forward with construction. Those are the updates. Yes, it's something that's not going to be, we're not going to see any dirt turned until 2025. Yeah, so that's where we're at right now with it.
No, and you asked some great questions. Y'all can read through, because John has these questions he put out and then gives the answer. This one here is something that comes up so many times. People say, well, why did we do it this way? Has there been any conversation about building the bridge first and then examining whether the rest of the project is needed? That people ask that question on this show to me a lot. What's the answer to this?
Yeah, so ALDOT's response is they're trying to stay, and to their credit, I think this is something that sometimes gets overlooked, they're trying to stay within a framework that was established in 2021 by the two MPOs, the Mobile MPO and Eastern Shore Metropolitan Planning Organizations. These are groups that are made up of our local elected officials. And these two groups got together to come up with this framework for the project, kind of coming out of that whole 2019 death of the I-10 project, the previous public-private partnership project, $6 tolls. That one was killed. A lot of attention back then on it. So what came out of that was this framework, and the framework says that, you know, we want this to be not a piecemeal project, but a comprehensive all-as-one project that will include the bridge and the bayway at once. They don't want this to be something where they build the bridge now, come back and do the bayway, and, you know, it's 25 years later before the I-10 project's completed. They want this done from what we understand and have been told would be about a five-year build. And so that's the reason why. That's the reason why they're wanting to do this all at once.
Is there, once this is moving like it is now, is there anything to the politics? Because, like, does it, if now Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth gets elected to be, who's been positive about this project and the 65 widening, if he is elected governor, do you see, I mean, would that change what ALDOT could give in the future? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Or if something changes in Washington, does that mean more money, or are we kind of locked in now?
Sure, those are interesting questions. I'm not completely sure on the answer to them, but I do think that when you have a grant that's been awarded, to rescind that grant would be you know, a serious look, and especially in this area, that's a historic grant that was received to the state of Alabama. It's the largest one ever.
Could there be others? Could they come back and say, and here's some more?
Yeah, well, that was certainly ALDOT's applying for the mega grant. Who's to say there could be the extra mega grant that's created in the next administration? We don't know that yet. There's a lot of unknowns. A lot of, you know, what could happen. Yes, Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth is, and he is a one of the few names that we're hearing as a possibility for our next governor. And he has touted this project as a priority project. So one would not assume that he would come in here and want to start making cuts to the state's obligations for this project. And, of course, you know, it'd be interesting to see who the next LDOT director might
yes.
be.
At, that's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking, is a change at the, you know, the executive branch and maybe a change at LDOT.
But, you know, there's also, you know, again, you mentioned politics at play. I mean, is it smart politics to come down and say, well, we don't, this project's too expensive, this is no longer a state priority, when you got, you know, some very influential groups, you know, that not yeah. to sneeze at, but you got the chamber, and you got mayors, you got city council members, and you don't want to make enemies out of all of them, because that trickles down, you know, to their voting bases as well. So you don't want to lose ball in Mobile County.
Yeah, I don't think anybody dare cut. I just wondered if there would be more added to it, because I'm kind of in a circuitous way getting around to the discussion of the toll. Right. And, you know, comments from Senator Albritton and others that because we were told it was capped, it wasn't going to go higher. But now it seems like at least there's discussion of maybe that's could change. You know, that's what I'm wondering. If they're going to say, listen, with the money that has been put out now, the money we talk about that we know that you just laid out, that the toll is going to have to be higher unless we get more money.
Well, I don't know exactly what that amount would be, but we do know what the framework is, that the local officials said that they want this to be a $2.50 toll. Now, where that's at right now is that toll would be in place for frequent users. There's a frequent user discount as well if you get an Algo pass. We don't know what those Algo passes will look like yet, but that's, you know, people that live in Baldwin and Mobile counties will presumably want to purchase one of those passes if they want to use the I-10
right.
Bayway over and over again. Or you take the free routes. Now, that was the big issue back in 2019, is that we would be tolling existing roadways and the tunnels, or the Wallace Tunnel. And that was a major concern at the time, because there was some discussions of whether or not, well, if you didn't toll them, that would lead to divergence. Divergence meaning cars and trucks
taking a free route, yeah.
Right, taking a free route instead of the... And right now, that's not under consideration. There are going to be free routes. So, you know, what does toll divergence mean? And I did get in here a little bit that there's an ongoing study going on what traffic would look like in Spanish Fork. Now, if you talk to Mayor McMillan in Spanish Fork, he has had this persistent worry about divergence leading into his community.
Yeah, the causeway.
And how the city.
Yeah, I mean, how can the causeway handle it?
Exactly, and how that might look for his city. So you got these issues that are still out there as well. You know, they're looking at, LDOT's indicated they're looking at an updated study on, and that work's ongoing, on exactly what that means for the city of Spanish Fork and the causeway as well, what they may do out there.
John, yeah, well, we'll continue to talk to you about this story going forward, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a big one. I mean, $3.5 billion, that's where we're at with this estimate right now. I've seen other estimates, but I don't know where those numbers are from. $3.5 billion, it could go up, yes. And
yeah, I've been doing this long enough that it was an $800 million project when it was first started discussed. Yeah, so
but it's the biggest one in the state, you know, this is not something that's a simple highway resurfacing. This is, and those aren't even simple anymore. So this is a major, major project. And there's just a lot of dominoes to it. And, you know, we'll just keep reporting as information comes out on it.
Well, the best update out there, y'all, check it out. John's work over at AL.com. People want to get to you, I guess, directly, whether they're talking about their pick for the Iowa-Ohio State game or the bridge. How do they find you online?
Yeah, I'm on X at JohnSharp99.
All right, I hope your picks are right, because I just stole all of them. And we'll be maybe at 8, both of us 8-2
next week.
Blame
me next week.
That's what I'll do. All right, thanks, John.
All right, thanks, John.
All right, there goes John Sharp. We're coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. on this Friday. By the way, your chance coming up sometime during this very show to win that $100 gift certificate from my man Joey Mason at Mason Hills Farm. You can warm up your dialing fingers, right? Remember the phone number 343-0106. Not yet. I mean, you might warm them up, but sometime before the end of the show, your chance to be caller number 6 and win that Mason Hills gift certificate. $100 to go check out what we've all been talking about with Mason Hills Farm, plus Smoke on the Farm coming up. We'll discuss that as well. Get a couple of texts here. So B-Dark says, do away with the bridge and help the storm victims. But it's, I mean, I get your heart in that, B-Dark. It just doesn't work that way. Now, the money that has been spent on so many other things, and we don't have the money for storm victims, is something. Speaking of which, so late, I mean, look at the numbers here, and just the same way that I want to make sure those people in Maui and the fires didn't get forgotten. You know, let's make sure we don't forget the now 215 is the latest report. 215 dead in the path of Helene. And what we're talking about the money-wise, so a story, the guys had it on one of the three big things this morning on Mobile Mornings. Story from the New York Post says, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas set off outrage Wednesday when he told reporters that the Federal Emergency Management Agency does not have the funds to see Americans through the rest of the Atlantic hurricane season. Y'all had one job. Remember that thing? He had one job. Said after the agency has spent more than $1.4 billion since the fall of 2022 to address the migrant crisis. Mayorkas in that press conference says, we're meeting the immediate needs with the money that we have. Y'all know the thing about the federal government? Y'all borrow and print money that we don't have. So don't tell me now you don't have it. I mean, this is the problem. We talk about what government should do. Right, the definition of what should be the job of government, and they don't have the money to do that. Mayorkas went on to say, we're expecting another hurricane hitting, and we do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season, and what is imminent? End quote. Critics pointed out the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, allocated $640.9 million this year in FEMA-administered funds to aid state and local governments coping with the influx of asylum seekers. And now we don't have the money to deal with this. Speaking of that, too, and we'll may address this when we get back from the break, that's a little more detail on this. I was reading a Reuters story about the deaths, and somebody had sent me a text about something from X that said a FEMA director who was acting arrogant and denying aid to North Carolina flood victims was beaten by local residents. I have not, that may be, that's something on X. I have not seen that in the news. So I think that's Sunny on the text line. If you can get any more clarification on that, I'd be interested. I did not see that. But in a Reuters story I was reading, they have a breakdown here of the flood insurance, or better yet, let's say the lack of. They actually have a pretty good graphic of the state of North Carolina. And on the coast, you see higher densities of flood insurance, right? Where people would think storm surge and those kind of things. When you look to the rest of the state of North Carolina, it is very low. So as we talk about this recovery, these folks aren't going to have flood insurance to lean on. It says counties in the western part of North Carolina hit hardest by Helene had starkly lower rates of flood insurance than coastal counties. Think that it makes sense because people didn't feel they were in a zone that they were going to deal with that, right? Says, here we go. Federal flood coverage also varies widely by region. While 43% of single-family homes in North Carolina's coastal Dare County had NFIP policies, just 0.5% of homes in the western counties hardest hit by Helene, according to a Reuters analysis of federal flood insurance data and census data compiled by the University of Minnesota. So only 0.5 of the homes there that were affected, less than 1%, had flood insurance. So that reflects the fact that FEMA's maps do not account for rainfall, leaving residents in the mountainous areas unaware of their risk. And says FEMA should update its maps to reflect that risk. How about that? That 0.5, less than 1% of those people we even have the flood insurance to reach out to. Been some stories coming out of the recovery there. It's like stories we've seen with flooding in Louisiana, seen flooding in Arkansas. You've seen groups like Cajun Navy come into effect. There's so many of those groups working now. Seem to be butting heads with the feds on these things as well. We'll talk about that when we come back. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Friday style. Y'all say hello to my buddy Blaine Price. He's a Parrish Tractor in Robertsdale. Blaine, let's talk about this. Looking at the weekend here, people thinking about, I don't know who might not be, but some people are thinking about heading to the woods here over the next, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. So 0% financing. You told us yesterday it's still happening?
It is still happening on all Kubota and Land Pride. Equipment that we have in stock. We've got a little bit of everything from zero turn lawnmowers, side by sides, any size tractor. We've got all of those in stock, as well as the skid steers and mini excavators, all qualify for that 0% financing right now.
That means what you heard Blaine say yesterday and just now, the side by sides, those great Kubota RTVs. So the selection is good, and those do qualify for 0% financing.
Absolutely. We've got all of the gas burners in stock, as well as the diesel-powered engines on the side-by-sides in stock right now. On the diesels, we've got the two-seaters, we've got the double row of seats, the four-seaters, and we've also got the enclosed cab RTVs side-by-sides as well. And, yes, all of that will qualify for that zero-interest financing through Kubota right now.
You also talked to me about this in the past. As you get people coming in getting new equipment, they're trading in as well. So what's it look like in trade-in?
Yes. So right now we've got we've been trading a lot, a little bit of everything. It's a wide variety of stuff, from tractors. We've got a couple side-by-sides as well. But we trade in just about anything. So we've got a wide selection of equipment that's pre-owned that is available, and most of it, yes, can be financed as well.
I like it. Tell folks how to find you.
Well, right here in the middle of Robertsdale on Highway 59 at Parrish Tractor. We're here Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturdays 8 till noon, or you can give us a call at 251-947-4171.
Hey, thank you, Blaine.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, there goes Blaine at Parrish Tractor in Robertsdale. Grab a couple of text here as well. Let's let's see. All right, so this texter said, will the tolls, this is from the conversation I had earlier with John Sharp, will the tolls be lifted once the project is paid for? Texter, that is what they have told us. That is what has been said. It's, so that's what they say. And yes, I do believe it. I think there's too many eyes on it. What over in Louisiana, big surprise, although I would argue that our state could rival Louisiana sometimes in corruption. But in Louisiana, they had, where was it? It was like, was it the bridge going like if you're going down to Belle Chasse? One of those toll bridges there in Louisiana, they did, I don't know if it was a TV station or print journalism, somebody did the dig into it, and they had been charged, and they had paid it off, I think, a couple years beforehand. And we're still charging tolls. But here, yes, the tolls are supposed to be lifted once the project is paid for. Who knows if I will still be on planet Earth at that point. Captain Doug says, Sean, here's a thought about the bridge and tolls. Leave the current bayway intact. Toll it and make it reduce tolls for the other route. Leave the current bayway intact. See, they're not going to do that, though. That's the thing, Doug. I mean, I hear you, but they're not. It says, leave the current bayway intact. Toll it and make the reduced toll for either route, old bayway or new bayway, at the same, at something like $1.75, restrict all semi-truck traffic onto the new bayway to reduce vehicle flow onto the old bayway. 500-year floods be damned. The current bayway has yet to flood, as I recall. Thoughts on that? Yeah, so those are my thoughts. One of the things, I was out the other day, and I was up under, I guess it was, last week, maybe a week ago, I ran out for a hit the Delta, and I was coming back under the Bayway, and it reminded me, and I need to look this up, but one of the arguments, one of the things that has been said is they are going to take down the Bayway because it is approaching its lifespan. Now I was looking underneath, and listen, it's not perfect looking underneath. It's not brand new. I remember, but there's been, you know, we discussed this so many times, I need to go back, but I think that is one of the things they said, it's they have to take down the old Bayway. And the argument being, we will have to have a new Bayway one way or another because it's reaching its end of lifespan. That's what I recall there. Let's see. Keith in Agricola says, FEMA spent all the money on illegal aliens and doesn't have enough for hurricane victims. You can't hate this administration enough. Navy Chief in Foley said, it's a new fiscal year for the federal government. Every October 1st with the new budget money, how does FEMA not have the funds? Quit bringing logic into this, Navy Chief. Because they're on the CR, I think that, you know, what they just passed, what, a couple weeks ago, is probably, you're correct. I mean, October 1st, new fiscal year for everybody, except probably in the federal government. Says number two, this is a money grab for more money. They're using FEMA funds for illegal migration. This is against the law, if I'm not mistaken. So how are they getting away with this? When I look at it, Navy Chief, it's piss poor planning is what it is. Right? Holding nothing in reserve. Even with my disagreement with what they spent the money on, which I think we probably agree on. If you're looking at the commitment of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, you don't spend it down and not have money in the kitty. I mean, it's just bad. It's just bad planning. Back to that story for a second, though. But think about how this is going to be, and what we're going to hear from insurance companies that have to pay some claims. So there are going to be claims in that area, Western North Carolina, in Tennessee, in Georgia, into Virginia, South Carolina, where they will have to pay tree through roof and those kind of things, even in places where they're not paying flood insurance. Those are going to be drastic. But yeah, less than 1% of the folks in Western North Carolina, and they, in this map, I'm looking at this Reuters story, they basically draw a line from Charlotte and go north, and then everything to the west, they're calling that zone the FEMA declared disaster zone. Less than 1% have flood insurance there. And then you've got the claims, of course, from Florida, the whole way up. I was watching, watching some of what went on in Tampa and St. Pete and those areas. And my buddy J.B. Buono, who used to be here at WKRG, is down there, and I've watched a lot of his video. Also watched some, I say amateur, I've got these folks that are like storm chasers on their own dime, and places like Cedar Key and the damage there. So the damage is going to be from, gosh, south of Tampa the whole way up through. And I've asked this before. When do you see, after Katrina we saw it, after I think it was Charlie in Florida, a couple where the insurance companies start going, well, we may not be able to continue to do business here and be able to write these policies, that policy, this, that, or the other. All right, let's go to, we've got phones, line two. Okay, line two is Clint in Fairhope. Hey, Clint.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good, man. It's Friday. Yeah, we're good.
Good deal. Hey, I get what you're saying about, like, the money's not there for the North Carolinians because they spent $1.4 billion on the asylum seekers.
Yeah, that's what Mayorkas said. Yeah, that's what Mayorkas said in that presser.
Yeah. All right, but when you're running a, $1.7 trillion annual deficit, the money's not there for every program that came before that, over the past $1.7 trillion, right?
I mean,
nothing is funded, but, I mean, a lot of things are not funded, and we don't have the money for it.
Yeah, and in this case, in this case, as much as I would wish for some fiscal responsibility there, in this case, if y'all are in the business of borrowing and printing up money, this might be a good time to do it.
Well, I mean, they're going to do it. But, you know, even if they fund FEMA with another, just say, $10 billion to get ready for the next storm and the next crisis and the next, we don't have the money for that. Like, that's just going to be printed money.
Yep.
So it's not just that they spent $1 billion on the asylum seekers. It's whatever they spent $1.5 trillion before that on, we didn't have the money for that either. So just wanted to make understood that.
100%. Yes, we have a great pattern of spending money that we don't have already. In this country, and it's not a popular subject. I don't think you hear anybody campaigning, either party, on tackling the debt in a serious way, and therefore I guess
which
we won't
is sad,
get it.
Which is very sad. When mathematically there was maybe a chance that maybe we could tackle the problem and work on it and pay down the debt and all, but I think mathematically they've just thrown their hands up in there and said, you know what, screw it, we're never going to be able to, you know, pay this back, and so we're not going to talk about it, we're not going to campaign on it, which is very sad. I mean, I still feel like, and maybe I'm naive, but I still feel like there is time to do something about it and get people to care more about it. Maybe I'm just hopeful, but
I think and I wonder if, you know, Clint, I mentioned this a lot when I just focused not just on the debt, but on the debt service. And maybe I'm showing my private side, you know, what makes me nervous in life, projected onto the government. But just the debt service, what you're paying in interest. Mm-hmm. And I would make that argument. And I think if I was in Washington, I think I could get bipartisan support, because I would say, hey, right now, wherever side you are, we're spending this money for debt service. This is not going to help a single American. Can we tackle this?
$700 billion, whatever.
Yeah. Just, y'all, we're not getting anything for it. It's just debt service. Could we tackle some things bipartisan way? And I'll tell you what, we'll make a deal. I would rather have some amount you can carve out of that be used for other programs. People want to grow programs in the United States. I'd rather that money go to an American citizen or a program than servicing debt. And it's naive, but I would think that maybe you can get some people to work across the aisle there on that one, say, listen, there could be money for other programs. We just have to not be servicing debt with it.
Okay. So I agree. Can I tell you a little story about the Simpson-Bowles Commission back in 2010?
Okay.
Do you have time?
We got about two and a half minutes.
I'll try to make it short. So let's say, I don't know what the debt service is now. I hadn't checked it in a while, but I think $700 billion a year, maybe, something like that.
I think it is, yeah.
Okay, so that's annually. So back in 2010, Alan Simpson, the senator from Wyoming, or former senator, and Erskine Bowles, ironically a representative out of North Carolina, they commissioned the Simpson-Bowles Commission to try to figure out a way to tackle $400 billion in debt over the course of 10 years, okay?
Right, that's when Obama was saying, like, we'd take 10%. What was it, like a 10% or something reduction? I remember
Let me make my stupid point. Yeah. So they said, hey, find a way to save $400 billion over the course of the next 10 years, which comes out to $40 billion a year, okay?
Chump change.
Simpson-Bowles, chump change, but Simpson-Bowles did it. They brought it to Congress, and they couldn't even agree on how to save $40 billion a year. So that's the state of sadness that we're in from a fiscal standpoint.
So we're screwed.
We're screwed. Yep.
With happy Friday. Thank you, Clint. Friday indeed. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile, 343-0106.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, and it's time to win. A little clue there as people warm up their fingers. Caller number 6 right now, You got that $100 gift certificate to Mason Hills Farms from my man, Joey Mason. He's got Smoke on the Farm coming up, but you have a chance to win that $100 gift certificate right now. And hopefully put it into good use, grilling for maybe a football game next weekend or friends. Meat's fantastic, and there's so many you can go, you know, you'd be like me, think steak. But that's just the tip of the cut with Mason Hills Farms. All kind of great meats to enjoy. And local company doing great things in the food world. Joey's a good guy as well. So check it out. Looks like we got a gazillion people calling in. So good luck. And we'll announce a name here shortly for the winner of the $100 gift certificate. All right. To the text line here, Backstrap Stacker. Says the money is, but the money is there for illegals and also for Ukraine. Yeah. Yep. Next texter said they need to quit sending our damn money to Ukraine. Chris in Orange Beach says, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't concrete get stronger as each year goes by? How can the Bayway be ending its lifespan? Chris, I'm not going to be able to tell you concrete engineering. I just know they had said it. That it's just the same way that bridges. You know, we had with the Rebuild Alabama, they're working on the bridges too, that the concrete or the rebar in them. I don't know, Chris, but there's a lifespan to the roadways, not just for the surfacing, but something, you know, something in the structure. Martin says, your last caller's final words, we're screwed, is right. The government should send us a large jar of, we'll just call it P. Diddy. How about we just call that stuff P. Diddy from now on? Send us the P. Diddy. All right. The Bayway story, I just wonder, there seems to be some, let me make sure I'm careful here so I'm accurate. Seems to be some openness in discussion to changing them saying that the toll would never go higher than X. Remember, it was last week or the week before, too, I had Mark Colson on from the Alabama Truckers Association, good guy, and I talked to him. I said, hey, what are y'all hearing on the trucking side for what your tolls will be? He said, it's not finalized yet. So, are we going to pretend? That's what derailed this whole thing in the first place. So, people about the, somebody asked, but yeah, so, it's not, okay, we're talking about here with the ILA strike being off. The language is interesting to me in this, that it's not over, but it's suspended, I think, is the word. You'll hear, but then sometimes you hear politicians will say they're not ending their campaign, they're suspending their campaign. So this is yes, no. This is from MyNBC 15. This story. So the union representing the 45,000 striking U.S. dock workers at the East and Gulf Coast ports has reached a deal to suspend their strike until January 15th to provide time to negotiate a new contract. I wonder if they didn't think that maybe the feds were going to bring in Holy Cow. You have an emergency. The president can put them back to work. I wonder if they were up against that and realizing that they were going to be forced back in for 90 days anyway, which, 90 days from right now? Yeah, October, November, November, December, December, January. Yeah, I mean, they're basically the same. That's interesting. So you throw that into the mix. So the pause in the strike here is pretty much the time period that the federal government could move in and make them go back to work. It goes on to the story, say the union, the International Longshoremen's Association, is to resume working immediately. And at least until January, said the person who spoke on the condition of anonymity, blah, 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 always have that. The agreement will allow the union and U.S. Maritime Alliance, which represents the shippers and the ports, time to negotiate a new 6-year contract. The union, of course, went on strike earlier this week. So it's suspended. It's in The Godfather. What is a suspended sentence? It's suspended, but it's not, doesn't seem finished. Also, I looked at my social media last night and have been looking at it and following some of the people that are doing rescue efforts up in Western Carolina, East Tennessee, Georgia, for the impacted area in the mountains, in the Smokies. And you're seeing the same thing, like Cajun Navy kind of folks working together to get things done. I heard Dalton talk about, he and I both follow Tim Kennedy and look at his efforts there. you had some. There's some things that have driven me crazy. Some things I think may have a bigger explanation. The question early on about the people flying private helicopters in and out. When I first heard the story, I said, well, maybe they aren't. Maybe they're worried about air traffic control. Well, now I've found out that they are working with air traffic control. So if those helicopters are on the radar, right, of air traffic control, then why the heck stop those people? They're doing, you know, they're not going to be running into each other. The drone thing, stopping the drone flights, there are some rules. Like I said, the nerdy me went through and I took the course to get FAA certified to be a commercial drone operator so I could operate the drone and charge for it and also fly in certain airspaces. There are, I mean, you have to follow with drones. You have to follow the same rules here. Like you're going to get your pilot's license. You learn a lot of the same things and where you can be flying and what decks, what ceiling and all that. Seems like you should be able to suspend some of that for this relief effort up there. And then, yes, I have seen the mules bringing supplies in and out. Those are really cool. And there's actually, if you ever go in the Smokies and hike Mount LeConte, you might see the llamas they use to bring supplies up. I hope they're using those as well. We'll talk about this more. And also when we come back, talking about what this deal was struck between the EPA and Alabama Power. We'll be joined by Baykeeper next.